assumption. If we assume that they stay there, Mr. Gravel's proposal would be substantially less, according to your opinion, and not in the range of what we are considering this $84 to $100 million. Yet I also hear you say that the local utilities are coming back to the table with something not necessarily there, but enough to talk about, that maybe we're getting up in that range that we can talk about. Maybe not the 85, but close. My question is, and it gets back to this, and I'll ask you another one. Are they anticipating renegotiating their own power sales agreements to get there, to make this? I mean, how can they, and maybe not, if they aren't, if Mr. Gravel can't make the numbers work, how can they make the numbers work if they don't break the power sales agreements? Do they have more efficiencies? Do they not have to come up with a 12% margin? Why can they do it? And that's what I kind of heard you say. They're still in the ballpark, but he isn't. Sounds to me like they're going to be down lower, as is Mr. Gravel, if we all agree that the power sales, which comes back to, if that's the case, why not go out open and see where it is? But
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanley, you did get basically right what I was saying, because he who controls that power sales agreement controls basically the outcome of what can be offered on these facilities. I mean, that's a simple way of saying it. If Senator Gravel can reach agreement with the utilities or the people who actually have signed that power sales agreement to certain modifications, I believe Senator Gravel can offer what he's talking about. And he believes he can offer that, even with the 12 to 15% profit, a rate of return. So when we talk about the senator, if we're saying he has to live within the power sales agreement based on our financial advisors and what we've looked at, and we're the ones that have done most of the number crunching on it, we don't see how he can do it living within the power sales agreement. On the other hand, the utilities can, because they control that power sales agreement. And they can make any modifications to it they want, as long as they all agree to it.
So they have an advantage in that, from that perspective, to be able to modify it. So they could modify it, come in with a proposal that would be substantially less than Mr. Gravel's based on those modifications that he can't get a commitment for, because they have an interest in keeping the proposal. The other, let me just ask you, I think I know the answer to this. I don't see a motivation for the communities. See, the first assumption out there is that we should sell these assets. You know, you start off with a faulty assumption, you end up with a faulty result. And you're going through the process, there's been intent language. I'm not saying it's faulty, but I don't think, and maybe you can give me your opinion, that short of the legislature or somebody pushing to sell the assets, that there's any way the communities would take these over. They have the best deal that they can possibly have, from my perspective, with it working the way it does right now. And so we have this unique situation where they're being drugged to the table, and I don't blame them. I would pay as little as anybody's going to pay as little as they could. But is that true? Is there really, or am I seeing it wrong? Is there a big advantage for them taking these things over?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanley, they'll be up here and they can speak to that. I think there is some advantage for them taking it over, but I don't think it's a big advantage. It's like, as Representative Barnes had talked about, Snettersham at one point in time, and the federal government and us taking it over from them. There is an advantage for us taking it over. Is it a humongous advantage? Probably not, but it puts it in our control, and it's important to have the control, I believe, to have energy control through the state instead of by the federal government. I think they look at this from their perspective also. But I also believe that because they truly believe all the risk lays on the state, that's why they were not willing to make what I would consider a serious offer initially. I have to tell you, I think it's an uphill battle that these dams get sold to anybody. I would be just as happy if it went away and we tried to figure out how to make these things operate for the benefit of the Alaskans, all Alaskans. But on the other hand, they have come forward with the parameters of an offer, and I guess I feel that the authorities felt honor-bound to at least sit down and talk to them about that. But I think it's uphill selling it to anybody, period.
Well, that's my perspective as well. I mean, when you tell me that the net present value is $84 million or 106 or in that range, based on assumptions of risk factors, and we can debate whether you've got the appropriate discount rates, et cetera, but you know, whatever number you come up with, from a state to get the most value, it doesn't appear that anybody, particularly with these power sales agreements in place, is going to pay that. And why would we sell an asset where we're going to get $84 million based on our best guess for $50 million is beyond me. I mean, it doesn't make sense to the state. Now, if you're wrong on your estimates, of course, that's a different question. That's not a question. I guess that's a statement.
I would like to respond, if I could, Representative Hanley. We won't bring you anything that's $50 million. If we don't believe that it has fair value, that we can show you that it has fair value, we will not come to the table. If it's the intent of the legislature for us not to even continue with negotiations, that's fine also with us. We do believe we need to try to do something, though, so we're not, or whoever's sitting here 5 years or 10 years from now is not coming back to you and saying, for the next 2 or 3 years, there's not any money coming in because of self-help. Because we don't believe that's in any of our best interests, because you then cannot determine how much money you have coming in to meet your budget requirements. So we believe we have to come up with formulate some type of plan that gives some financial security to these. And we're willing to do that. As I said, we've been looking at that.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Mr. Simmons? If not, thank you very much. Next we have the gentleman, Mr. Eric Redman. So. If you could just state your name and your affiliation and position.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eric Redman. I'm a lawyer for the City of Wrangell, and I have a prepared statement which I can distribute afterwards. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. For the past 14 years, I've represented Wrangell on 4-dam pool matters in the Lake Tyee project, and in the 1980s, I was one of the people who negotiated and drafted the power sales agreement, testified here in this room about it. I spent good portions of the 84 and 85 session here in Juneau working with Representative Barnes and others on legislation, the 4-dam pool legislation. For many years, I've also represented other Alaska entities, including Alaska Electric Light and Power on the Snedisham project on the sales agreements, and also Chugach Electric on Bradley Lake, Susitna, Rail Belt Intertie matters, other power projects, natural gas, and related contracts. So, all that work has given me great respect for the tenacity and effectiveness of Representative Barnes in assisting power project development throughout the state, and particularly in the Rail Belt. Like many other people, I share the frustrations that she's expressed about the funding historically for Rail Belt energy projects. I also agree that if the state is determined to do so, that the state can cash out its investment in the 4-dam pool and use that money either for Rail Belt energy funds or for anything it wishes. Whether the state should do that or not is a policy question for you to decide, and I don't have any views on it. What's the best means to achieve divestiture, though, if you intend to do it, if you think it's what you want to achieve, and what you should try to accomplish in the process? Those are matters I do have views on, based on these many years of participating in the 4-dam pool and most recently being a participant in the divestiture negotiations. I want to make clear right now that I'm not the lead lawyer in the divestiture negotiations. Mr. Saxton, sitting behind me, and Mr. Carlson, the chair of the PMC, are clearly our leaders. I'm just the lawyer for Wrangell, but having played a role in getting that contract drafted and that legislation through, it seemed appropriate that I should come talk today to you about the matters that you're discussing. I believe personally that the shortest route to an optimal divestiture, if you want a divestiture, that is a divestiture that really works in the real world and that will satisfy the legislature, is for both sides, ADA and the 4-dam pool communities, to continue for now in this current negotiation process. If either side drags its feet, or if we can't get an agreement, or if the agreement we reach is not satisfactory to you for any reason, then a different course may very well make sense, and certainly you have the freedom to pursue it. But those negotiations that we're in now haven't failed yet. Secondly, I also believe there are very strong reasons of prudence and policy for trying, at least initially, to divest these facilities to the four dam pool communities rather than to other parties if it can be done on terms that you find acceptable here in the legislature. If this resolution were adopted, in my view, the effect of it would be to basically terminate, and I think prematurely, the ongoing divestiture negotiation. Reasonable people can differ on whether the negotiations are a good idea or whether they're likely to produce an acceptable outcome to you. But as one of the negotiators, I think on balance the negotiations are a good idea, and I think there's a reasonable chance that they're going to produce something that you will like. And like other representatives of the Four Dam Pool, I hope you'll allow us a reasonable time within which to complete these. In support of this, I'd like you to ask that you consider four basic points. The first is that the current divestiture negotiation process, including all the ground rules for the negotiation, was selected by ADA on behalf of the state. It's been relied on by the Four Dam Pool utilities at significant cost, and most important, it appears to be working. Now, Representative Barnes knows far more details of history than I, and I was surprised by some of what I learned today listening to how the negotiations came about. But I can tell you from the perspective of the city of Wrangell, and this responds partly to Representative Hanley's point, the negotiations and having to begin them was not welcome. I mean, we would rather not, but the state asked us to, and we said, this is part of what you do when you're in a contract with someone. You have good faith, fair dealing. We will go to the table, and we will try to do what we can to see if a win-win solution can be achieved. If the negotiation process fails, then some alternative process, perhaps an RFP, might very well be reasonable if that's what you want to do to get divestiture. And as the negotiation process itself, Mr. Carlson and Mr. Saxton are here, and they can speak to it. Secondly, all the parties to the existing process recognize that any negotiated divestiture proposal will necessarily require enactment of enabling legislation. There is no way to do a divestiture under existing state law. So there's no way we can do a deal that doesn't come back to you and meet with your approval. And if we agree with ADA on some proposal but you don't like it, it's the same as if we never reached an agreement, because it won't go anywhere. We all know about this legislative test. It's the ultimate hurdle, and all we're saying is, if you were this far into it, would you give us an opportunity to see if we can clear this hurdle? Third, and this has been alluded to, the state and the Four Dam Pool utilities are bound to one another through the power sales agreement. It's a long-term contract from which neither side can be forced to release the other against its will. The laws that govern assignment of contracts provide that Party A can assign the contract to a different entity, but even an assignment to another entity doesn't get Party A off the hook. It's the ultimate guarantor of performance, except with the consent of Party B. So one ground rule that these negotiations were begun under, the four ground rules that Randy mentioned, the second one was the state was only interested in an outcome that got the state completely off the hook, all risks, all obligations, done with the Four Dam Pool. And for this to occur as a practical matter, doesn't matter how you divest the projects, there will have to be a successful negotiation with the Four Dam Pool utilities, because the only way to get off the hook completely is to get rid of that contract or change it. And if we have to have a successful negotiation sometime, doesn't it make most sense to try to do that successful negotiation now in order to have a divestiture? And finally, and this is one again on which people could certainly differ, but it seems to me that the very purpose, and I was here at the time, as well as several other people in this room, the very purpose of the state's huge and often frustrating investment in the Four Dam Pool and the other power projects was to provide economic benefit to the state and its citizens through a reliable and affordable power supply that would maintain and, if possible, enhance opportunities for economic development, in particular Alaska localities and regions. And despite the Four Dam Pool's disappointing power supply economics, which are disappointing to the Four Dam Pool communities, believe me, not just to the state, the original purpose, I don't think, should be lost. And on the contrary, you can still rescue, and we can too, some portion of that original purpose, as long as the financial benefits of these projects, and not just their burdens, but the benefits, remain divided between the state and the communities, and not in other hands. Given what has been done, given the history, I think it'd really be sad, given all the state has spent and all the communities have paid, and all the lofty principles that motivated the energy program for Alaska, if you sell these assets below cost, which, believe me, is the only way to sell them, if you sell them below cost to private entities, it means that, in effect, some portion of the remaining economic value of these assets will end up in private hands, even though it's public hands that are taking the loss. And I think that to do that at a time when there's still a possibility to keep all the benefits such as they are that these projects can produce in public hands would be too bad. The current context is where we are. Ada asked that we get together to discuss divestiture. At least that was my impression. I know Randy's is a little different. His comes from the litigation, but first I heard we were being invited to come by the chief of staff and by Ada to negotiate, or to discuss, I should say, divestiture. And Ada dictated the ground rules of it, the four principles that we had to meet, including that at the end of the day, the state should be off the hook entirely from the Four Dam Pool obligations. Despite misgivings in the communities we represent, the utilities agreed to participate. And the Four Dam Pool is not a monolith, but I can tell you from the point of view of Wrangell, to say that there were misgivings understates the matter dramatically. I'm sure in Wrangell people would much prefer never to have heard about divestiture and to go along with other things to do. Over time, our discussions did turn into negotiations, and the negotiations have made genuine progress. I think most of the credit for this belongs to Ada, which has conducted itself with a degree of openness and cooperation and professionalism that has largely overcome the mutual mistrust that previously characterized all Four Dam Pool negotiations. Relying on that trust and on the progress, Ada and the Four Dam Pool communities have invested a lot of time in this process, and a lot of money too. And we'd like to bring it to a successful conclusion if we could, and to me a successful conclusion would be a deal which satisfies Ada, satisfies the Four Dam Pool communities, and satisfies you and other entities of the state, the administration, and so forth. As I've mentioned, one of Ada's primary objectives was to make sure the state ends up off the hook and free from any continuing risks and obligations. In our negotiation, in the context of our negotiation, what that means is Ada's wanting to transfer to the communities the risks that the state now has under the power sales agreement. And our discussion of a potential purchase price has obviously been driven by this reality, namely that the price has to be low enough under those terms and conditions so that the communities could both raise the money, pay the money to the state, accept the risks now, which are significant financial risks, and still not come out worse than they are today. And that's a difficult set of constraints to meet. That is a hard thing to do in the negotiations. If the state's objective were instead of trying to say we want to be done with the Four Dam Pool and done with all the risks, if the state's objective were to say we want the highest cash price we can get for these assets, then I think it might very well make sense. It'd be a completely different negotiation if we were negotiating that. But it might very well make sense for the state to say, gee, the way to get the most money is to keep some of the risk that we have today under the power sales agreement, let the buyer be free to that risk, and let the buyer pay us as many dollars as he can, and if something bad happens, we'll deal with it when it happens. But that's a completely different process than the one we've been in. And this is where the state's choice of divestiture objectives really drives the outcome. A little history, not as exhaustive as Representative Barnes, and from a quite different perspective perhaps, but this is my view of it. The problem of high costs, really high costs, and high risks, really high risks, is what characterizes the history of the Four Dam Pool. Financially, these projects have been great disappointments in terms of the original expectations of the state and the original expectations of the community. The state ended up having to spend far more for these projects than it ever intended, about $500 million in total. In addition, as Representative Barnes has pointed out, the state didn't end up building the Susitna project, and it was only able to fund partially a lot of the rail belt energy projects that were contemplated at the time. I think it's completely fair to say that if the state had had any way of anticipating these outcomes, few, if any, of the Four Dam Pool projects would ever have been built. And it's probably true in Sitka, power projects might not have been built there either, that had anyone known how it was all going to come out and how little the rail belt might get out of this in energy projects, none of this might have happened. But it did. They were built. When I was here in 1985 and 84, Senator Fakes and Senator Halford, who were more hostile, I think, to the Four Dam Pool communities than anybody has been since at the time, in their understanding, I tried to say, you must understand, this is now a salvage operation. You have spent $500 million to build these dams with this limited amount of capacity, generating capacity, and now we all have to try to get the best we can out of it, you for the state and we for our communities, and let's try to find a solution that works. The financial expectation of the communities was bitterly disappointed for the same reasons. The Piye Lake project, for example, was begun in the belief, at least in Wrangell and Petersburg, and I think from reading the legislative audit that was done 10 years ago, it was the belief really statewide, that the entire construction cost of those of that project could be funded out of grants. There might have been some payback requirement, but grant money was thought to be sufficient to get them built. Wrangell and Petersburg certainly hoped for cheap power that would spur their economic development, and instead they and all the other four dam pool communities ended up paying what's now 6.4 cents a kilowatt hour for just for the wholesale power, which isn't the highest price in the state, but it is a very high price to pay for wholesale power. It's twice the price of power from Bradley Lake or from Snettisham, for example. The four dam pool communities often feel that others don't understand our relatively costly power and instead regard four dam pool power as some type of priceless gift for which the communities are somehow insufficiently grateful. We also hear that communities, despite agreeing to pay these disappointingly high rates, somehow took advantage of the state in the power sales agreement. And I couldn't disagree more with that. As I said, we paid every penny on behalf of these communities that we could pay, because if we didn't, we couldn't have made a deal. And the state knew that we were paying every penny we could possibly pay. And the only reason to do that was to give the state as good a return as could possibly be gotten out of a very, very bad situation that existed at the time. The source of all these disappointed expectations and bruised feelings is simply stated. The four dam pool projects taken as a whole turned out to be very, very expensive for the relatively small amount of power they produce. At a time when nuclear plants were being canceled in the lower 48, throughout the lower 48, because their costs had reached the astronomical level of $3,000 per kilowatt of installed capacity, the Tyee Lake project was being built for twice that amount. Except for Swan Lake, the other four dam pool projects also suffered massive overruns, which required debt financing as well as grants, which in turn produced very high power rates for the communities and produced very little return for the state. And to make matters worse, despite these high costs of construction, some of the four dam pool projects also turned out to have serious design and construction flaws that have cost many millions of dollars to correct. The costs of these errors in original construction are borne by the state under the power sales agreement. Why is that? The reason is very simple, but forgotten. It's because the power sales agreement obligates the utilities to pay every cent they reasonably could have been asked to pay in order to get the power when the power is available. They could not have taken in addition the risk of a $37 million loss of the transmission line for the Tyee project, for example. We paid those rates, which were negotiated right here in this building, right on a piece of paper, brought up here, approved by these committees and by this legislature before we could put them in the power sales agreement. And contrary to what what Senator Gravel has said, it is simply not true that the state's money comes last. The debt service payment is on every single kilowatt hour that we buy. We have to pay that. And that's right down a list that we negotiated at the time, right down a list the legislature approved. And what was it based on? It was based on the fact that we had no power cost savings by paying that amount. That was what we were paying for power, what we were paying for diesel. That was our diesel alternative. That's what we paid. That's why the utilities do not bear these other risks under the agreement, because they have no cost savings from these contracts. The other reason the state's bearing that risk is the state had spent so much money on the projects that it didn't want to do the thing that every other power project developer has to do, which is that when it was done, it did not create any reserve funds. There are no reserve funds that were created as part of getting the projects built. The state said, we put enough money into this, we would rather take the risk of these problems and deal with them when they come along. And so that's the other reason why those risks are on the state. Now, some of the money, as you know, has been diverted for self-help. I want to make it really clear the money does not get diverted to the utilities. The contract is written in such a way that the state has an obligation to pay for certain costs. If the state cannot come up with the money by other means, then the debt service payments the utilities pay, they're entitled under the contract to withhold, to give to the state to pay for those repairs. And that's how the mechanics of the agreement work. It's too bad it's happened. It's just one more disappointment associated with these projects. There simply is not enough money to go around these projects. That's what the problem has been. Putting it all together, and here's my conclusion. The ground rules that ADA imposed on us at the beginning of the negotiations had two key ones. The first was that the existing power sales agreement couldn't be changed. And the second was that at the end of the day, the state had to end up free from all the risks on the agreement. That's the context in which we've been negotiating. If we succeed, and we might not, but if we do, the state will get some significant amount of money, cash, from the four dam pool, and it would be well shed of all its obligations under the contract. The communities will have to work very hard to prevent their power rates from going up to pay that purchase price and also take these risks, but that would be what a success would include. I think ADA thinks, and maybe after today it will be rethought, but I think that what ADA thought was that it was following previous expressions from the legislature that the legislature would like to be rid of the risks and problems that this agreement creates for the state. And so we've been trying to play by ADA's rules. That's why the dollar value of what we finally agree on, if we play by those rules, will certainly be less than, you know, some really high number, because we'll be taking the risks along with giving up the dollars. It's also why nobody else, and certainly no private buyer that I don't think is likely to be willing to buy the projects, perform the power sales contract as currently written, and still give the state a very high price, which is, again, a condition on which ADA insisted in the negotiations. So in short, if you divest the Fort Dam Pool facilities to the communities on the terms that we've started these negotiations on, as opposed to selling the assets to a private buyer for the highest price you can get, you've got two completely separate concepts, and they have to do with where the risk ends up, who ends up with that risk. They're not comparable objectives. They're two different negotiation objectives. They don't produce comparable divestiture outcomes. They're really apples and oranges. What we're going to bring you, I hope, in the next 120 or 160 or whatever days is, we're kind of bring you an apple. We hope we'll do it soon. We hope you'll take a look at it. We hope you'll like it, and we hope you'll want to do it. But if you don't like it, if we fail to bring it to you, or if when you look at it you decide you'd prefer an orange, then you have the power to reject it and take that path. All we're saying is you can send us down a different road, but please let us get to the end of this road first. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It seems that what I hear you saying is that since the power sale agreements are controlled by the utilities and renegotiating them will have to be an integral part of putting together a proposal, utilities control that you have a tremendous trump card or tremendous advantage that others perhaps don't. So I guess I don't understand why then you would be fearful of a fair open RFP process in which it seems like you have an advantage that others don't.
If you understand me to say that, Mr. Chairman, then I haven't spoken clearly, because I don't agree with that. I don't believe that we have any trump card there. What I believe is that we are in a process now in which ADA began by saying you must leave the power sales agreement in place as part of this negotiation, because we, ADA, don't want to get into the process of opening it up. So if we say, okay, we have to leave it in place, what can we do? We've taken that as a constraint. If that constraint is removed, then it's removed and one can do something else. It's true that any third party, I mean, we have an agreement between Party A and Party B right now, and it's true that Party C, if they want to come in there, has got to deal with the fact that both Party A and Party B are in this contract. Do we have a trump card in the sense of, would we accept just anybody in the world in place of the state under the agreement? Of course we wouldn't, because the financial cost of keeping the projects going if something bad happens is currently being borne by the state, and we think we can count on the state to honor its contract. You know, we don't know that we can count on any third party necessarily, it depends on who the third party is, to do the same thing. So my point is merely, in order to do any divestiture, something has to be done by way of getting agreement with the communities. The communities are trying, under one process, to reach an agreement that we thought the state was asking us to try to reach. And there can be another process that you follow later if we're unsuccessful, and I personally don't have any fear about it at all. If the state decides it's a policy matter, they want to open it up and go put out for the highest bid, that's a policy decision for the state to make. It's true the Fort Dam Pool communities will have to be dealt with because they hold a contract, but that you know, is not an insurmountable obstacle, I don't think.
Thank you. Representative Barnes, then Hanley, and Martin.
Frequently we hear testimony about the high cost of electricity borne by the communities of the Fort Dam Pool. I would like to read you some numbers and ask you, to your knowledge, if they are correct. And I'm going to give you some other numbers as a way of comparison, because this testimony of your excessive cost versus that, say, of the railroad. First, the city of Anchorage for our residential per kilowatt hour is 9.8 cents. Ketchikan, 9.3 cents. Petersburg, 9.7 cents. Sitka, 9.0 cents. Alaska Light and Power, which is a part of Anchorage as well, 8.7 cents. The city of Wrangell, 10.3 cents. Chugach Electric, another Rail Belt community, 9.5 cents. Golden Valley, 9.8 cents. Fairbanks, another Rail Belt community, 10.7 cents. Having heard those figures, do you still feel that you are in the four dam pool communities paying an excessive rate? And note that I left out Cordova, or the Copper Valley one, and I also left out Homer because, Kodiak, because those have excessive rates, I think, due to very poor management.
Well, without commenting on the latter point, and without questioning in any way the numbers that you have just read off, I would respond in the following way. I don't think that the power cost to the four dam pool is excessive. I think that the wholesale power rate, which is what I'm talking about now, the wholesale power rate for power from the four dam pool projects is quite high. It's very high compared to the cost of power from other hydro projects in the state. And what I'm trying to say is not that, gee, we're in an insufferable position. I'm saying that we don't have some giant economic benefit that has resulted from this. We have not got the benefit that people originally hoped they were going to get, which was low wholesale power cost. And as far as Chugach and MLP go, I'm happy to have been the person who negotiated Chugach's gas contracts. I think we did the best gas contracts that were done in the United States, and we got very, very low cost. And I'm very glad we did for the ratepayers in the Rail Belt. And I think that a lot of our costs, the fact they're lower, attributable to things you've done and other legislators here to help us on the Alaska Intertie, on Bradley Lake, and a variety of other things. I'm just saying that for the project as a whole, to have your sole source of power be 6.5 cent power for a community at the wholesale level is not low, even by Alaska standards. It's not the highest in the state, as you're clearly correct in saying that. There are other communities that are not as fortunate as we are, but it's not as if we walked away with some giant economic prize, because we didn't.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, it's not 6.5, it's 6.4.
Excuse me, you're absolutely correct.
And I don't believe that you're in any way being, especially those figures I read off, being in any way hampered as it relates to fairly low-cost electricity. And I have one last thing. In 1995, who was the attorney for the city of Seward, or for the city of Wrangell?
Who was the city? Who's the city attorney?
City of Wrangell.
I'm sorry, I don't know. I only represent Wrangell on power matters, so I don't know other aspects of it. I mean, Harry, you might know. You mean the city attorney?
Who was on contract as the attorney for the city of Wrangell?
Well, I certainly have always represented Wrangell on Tyee matters throughout, including that period, but I don't represent Wrangell on other matters.
I would like for somebody to make a matter of record if there was a senator on contract to the city of Wrangell in 1995 when this intent language went into the budget bill on the other body.
I certainly can confirm, and that's subject to check, that there's been at least some period during which Senator Taylor has been the city attorney for the city of Wrangell, but I don't know. When you asked 1995, I don't know if it was during that period or not.
Thank you very much.
Representative Hanley.
Briefly, back to the power sales agreements, which seem to be a problem. You said one of the assumptions is that the power sales agreements would remain in effect by ADA, and that also the state would be able to be relieved of its risk.
Well, its obligations. Yeah.
Its obligation or its risk. Be totally done with it, or however you put it. But it also sounded to me like you said, to be able to be totally done with it, those contracts would have to be revised.
No, excuse me. I'm sorry. What has been, and I probably went too fast. What ADA said was, number one, we're not going to amend the power sales agreement as part of the divestiture. Number two, the divestiture has to be complete. In other words, the utilities themselves have to step into the state's shoes, and the states and the communities have to agree to release the state. So in that respect, I suppose you could say the power sales agreement would be amended. It would be amended to let the state completely out of it. Whereas if the state today went off and assigned it to someone else, Senator Gravel's group, and let's say they could do that, the laws of assignment are such that they cannot relieve themselves of their initial obligations by assigning the contract. And what the state said is, we do want to relieve ourselves of the obligation, but we want you, the community, to take the contract as whole. So what we've always assumed is, if we did this, what would happen would be a sort of a two-stage process. Stage one, we'd have a divestiture from the state to the communities with that power sales contract in place. Stage two, the four dam pool communities, who do not always get along, would begin the negotiation process for how to modify that agreement among themselves to try to make the 40-amp pool really work at that point with no state in it anymore. But we don't know how long that would take. There are many different views, as you know. Kodiak and Ketchikan feel differently from Wrangell, Petersburg, and Copper Valley and so forth. But we've always thought amendment of the power sales agreement would be some other stage when the state was no longer a party, if that were successful.
So can the state relieve itself, get rid of them totally without a change in the power sales agreement?
It could. The state can do what Senator Gravel suggested, which is the state being a sovereign can always just tear up the contract.
Oh, I mean,
but I mean, the state might have to pay damages for that.
No, I understand. I guess what I heard you say, and I think I'm correct now, is that for the state to be totally done, there's a little...
The utilities would have to agree.
They would have to agree, and there would
right.
be some modification of the contract.
At least that modification.
To let the state no longer have any obligation once these
right.
things are transferred.
And I think to get to the practical matter now instead of just philosophical, part of the negotiations has been how to put the projects on a firm enough financial footing that the state could really be assured that the utilities would really be able to do what they said. In other words, it's one thing to transfer the projects, as you know, and it's another thing for the communities to show up 2 years later back on the legislature's door saying, oh my God, when we took the projects, we didn't know we were going to have these terrible problems and we can't afford them. And I think that ADA has very responsibly been trying to say, if we transfer it to you, we want to create a situation in which you'll never darken our doorstep again about these projects. And that, you know, given the sort of risks that have been shown in the HARSA report and so forth, that's one of the great technical problems of how to make this work.
If I could just briefly, on the timeline, if we're going to get into this, if we agree or we decide not to pass this resolution, frankly, I know how it works in the legislature. Without a timeline or a deadline, decisions will be made one way or the other. Well, it'll either succeed or not. I would like to set a deadline, particularly if this does not pass. I know ADA has 120 days, they said, if we don't feel things are progressing. But I would like to have a deadline. And what do you think is a fair time?
On this, I can speak only for myself. And again, this time, not representing the entire 40-amp pool, just Wrangell, and with the note with the little caveat I gave at the beginning, which is from Wrangell's point of view, if the divestiture had never come up, it would have been okay. So speaking for myself, I think you can put any reasonable deadline on you want for reaching an agreement in principle, at least an agreement as detailed in MOU form as the contract for the 40-amp pool itself, which we brought to you and was approved before we finalized the contract. However, you know, God dwells in the details, and I don't think you can reasonably say that by, you know, July 31st this transaction has to close or that all the due diligence could possibly be completed or any other thing. I think we could just try to bring to you a proposal that says these are the main material terms, we've agreed on them. If you approve them, we will take them to our governing boards for approval and see if we can get approval, and then we'll go forward and try to implement it. But so you could put, when Randy says, you know, July 31st or whatever for that type of a process, as far as I'm concerned and as far as I think Wrangell's concerned, that's fine, that's reasonable. If that's what you want from us, which is to know the terms of a deal.
Because I would, if July 31st or something, if we go that route, you know, I would like Randy and you to make some decision that, yes, we have something that we think some of the little details, yes, we need to work out, but we've got an agreement in concept, or no, we don't.
Right.
And I don't want to be here next January, even if we do this, and say, well, we're still there. So
I think that's fair. It's fair for you to want to know when you come back into session next that this thing either worked or it didn't work. And from Wrangell's point of view, I think Wrangell would like to know that too.
Representative Martin.
I have two major concerns, Mr. Chairman. One, what would diesel be costing today if you were still in that generation of power?
It's a little hard to know. It's certainly a lot higher than it was at that time. But I say in Wrangell's case, Wrangell had a very favorable contract with the mobile refinery in Ferndale, where we paid the price delivered in Wrangell, which was the price, the loaded on board price at Ferndale, and we were paying less than 70 cents a kilowatt hour. Less than 70 cents a gallon at the time. We had adequate storage capability, and we could generate using the diesel generators we had at the time for about 14. Kilowatt hours per gallon, so we could generate for about 5 cents for the fuel cost. You might say yes, but now you've avoided all the machine cost, and this is one of the, again, God dwells in the details. The details include we haven't avoided any machine costs at all. We have to maintain the same diesel plant we maintained before because the project is not capable of providing 100% reliable power all the time. So what we have saved is the fuel cost, but I will certainly concede to you that at today's diesel prices, this is better than diesel. I just don't, I wouldn't concede that if there had been no Tyee project, that we would be in 1997 generating with diesel. The first time I got on a helicopter and flew from Wrangell to the Tyee project, I passed about six small hydro sites that would have been really nice ones for Wrangell and sufficient to meet its load. And I think that's the type of thing that would have been done if we had had no Tyee.
Mr. Chairman, kind of similar to what Mr. Handler was asking for before, and that is, how can we be sure? And I honestly have never been comfortable with the Southeast because they use their political power to the maximum with the clientels, with the give and takes of money that was available. You get 100,000, we get 100 million, something like that. And
good deal.
So I've never been comfortable in that no matter what we do with Southeast is not enough until they get it totally free. What can we be assured of? What kind of guarantees are you going to give the ADA, and who we have to assure afterwards for the public well-being, public domain, is a guarantee. You can't be sued as communities. We can't sue you for anything if you drop the project. Can you bond yourself to make the state whole if the whole thing falls through?
Can I divide that into two parts? The first part, I'd just like to point out for the record, we've paid $91 million in debt service on this project. So we've paid some money. I think we can be counted on to do that. But on the other way around, I think there may be types of assurances that could be sought. The biggest assurance is probably the discipline that Mr. Gravel and Randy Simmons both referred to, and that's the market. In order to finance the acquisition, we're going to have to borrow money. In order to borrow money, we're going to have to assure the bondholders that they're going to be repaid, and that means we're going to have to enter some big covenants. That brings up a very important point. One risk that is not mentioned that Mr. Simmons didn't mention, and that is right now under the contracts, the state has one additional risk he didn't mention, which is the market risk. It's the risk that if this power turns out to be too expensive compared to other power and can't be sold, the communities may end up with different power suppliers, but we are not obligated to pay the state money for power that's too expensive. And Where I'm sorry, Representative Barnes is gone. I know as a power lawyer and someone who works around the country right now, I think that 6.5 cents per kilowatt hour for wholesale power is dangerously close to being a very, very risky price over the long term with the way technology is changing. And if we buy these projects, we will have to pay their costs even if it turns out that there's a cheaper source of power available in our communities and we could lose loads. Maybe you look at Wrangell and Petersburg and you think they're not too likely to lose load. But look at Kodiak, look at Copper Valley, look at other communities in the Fort Dam Pool that have some very large individual loads, and then look at what's available today for generating technology. And I think you can see that that's a significant risk we're worried about, too. But that risk of the bondholders will have to be satisfied on as well. So,
Chairman, would like to recommend that we go further and later into this debate, that maybe the budget and audit would be viewed on other agreements that ADA has been involved in. Maybe instead of waiting to next January to find out what's going on for the legislators to use the budget and audit on a bi-monthly basis to find out how this is progressing, if we go that route.
Representative Davis, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the time frame, July 31st, as indicated by ADA, that they would like to see an agreement with the Four Dam Pool. And of course, we don't know how solid that agreement's going to be or how close you might be at that time. But let's just say that that's the time set for negotiations. And if there's no agreement by then ADA has other options. And then you said that you might come up with an MOU by that time, then the state would need to approve that, then you go back to the municipalities for approval.
Or reverse it.
Okay, it's not. That, I thought maybe that was set.
No, all I was trying to say is if someone said you must by July 31st have negotiated, agreed upon, presented a final contract and have completed all the permit investigation, financing work, and just be ready to go, have this project ready to close, then it just can't be done by July 31st. But if the legislature wants to be assured of what the terms of a deal are that are acceptable to the communities by July 31st, I think that is a push. It's going to be difficult. It'll be sort of a forced march, and people will have to put other things aside. And I don't know, you know, often it's difficult with the five utilities and with Ada having some other projects too, but I think it's at least a doable. Now, I should look around to see if we should. Is it totally, is it doable or not?
We agreed to do it.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that the state approval and then municipal approval wasn't set in stone as the process, because with July being in the interim for the legislature,
right,
and not coming to till January, then that would certainly be an extended time before Ada could look at alternatives.
I'm told that we agreed. I do know from representing the municipality that we have a city council. The city council typically meets once a month, and if you're going to put something like, do you want to own the Taiyi project on the agenda of the city council, you better know what the terms are well in advance of that meeting. So I work back from July 31st. I think this is very, very difficult. And I also can say from experience, from having negotiated it before, of course, Wrangell was blameless throughout the whole process, but Petersburg was really difficult. And people will recall that this idea of saying to the Petersburg City Council, get us this decision by this date, was sometimes made it harder to get the decision than it did to reassure the City Council, you can have another month if necessary, if that's what it's going to take to look at.
Some idea of how the conditions and what's being paid for in the four dam pool. If I might come back to my back door, and I should probably know this, but I don't, and maybe I should have asked Ada as opposed to you, and maybe you know, though, what sort of payback provisions is included in the Bradley Lake project?
What sort of payback provision?
Yes.
I'm not sure I understand it. Bradley Lake is financed about 50% with grant money and about 50% with conventional market bond financing. The utilities have take-or-pay contracts in which they agree to pay every year the cost of the projects, including the cost of debt service on the bonds for Bradley Lake.
Yep.
So the state has no payback for the grant, and the loan portion is not a loan from the state. It's privately, it's financed in the open market.
Representative Davies. And then we have a number of people on teleconference. I did have a list and designated spokesman for a number of the communities. I would like to at least get a couple of quick questions before we close the hearing today. We are running long as it is. We don't intend to move the bill or the resolution today. So go ahead.
I think this is a quick question, but I just want to go back to Representative Hanley's question about the sort of your understanding of what the terms were that Ada presented to you. And the principal, you indicated two principal terms, one being that the power sales agreement would not be modified, and the other that at the end of the day they'd be out of it. Now, clearly, at the end of the day they'd be out of it is a modification of the power
yes,
sales agreement.
I agree.
So is your understanding that those terms relate in the sense that other than that one change, the other terms all remain in place?
Exactly. In other words, my understanding is that what the state was saying to us is, you take the power sales agreement, and as part of this divestiture, you step into the state's shoes and you agree, which would not normally be the case in an assignment, you agree to let the state out. So now, the 40 Amp Pool Inc. becomes the state for purposes of that agreement, and we, the state of Alaska, are shed of it with your agreement. And that's what I understand it to be. But we're not.
All the other terms remain
fixed.
Yeah,
not, right.
But you know, until that agreement is reached, and then surely
exactly
after that, there's going
to
be.
Well, the very first thing we'd have to do would be to take the state off the project management committee, which is also part of the agreement. I mean, there are changes we would have to make once we had the projects.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Jeff Musi from Petersburg. Is Mr. Musi on teleconference? Okay.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. Let's
okay. How about Allery Stanton in Ketchikan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am here. I will be very brief. I would associate myself with the remarks of Mr. Redman, who represented Wrangell, and tell you that on behalf of the City of Ketchikan, doing business as Ketchikan Public Utilities, appreciate the chance to continue with the negotiations and to try and make a good deal not only for us, but for the rest of the citizens of the state. I'm very sympathetic with the remarks of Representative Barnes, who I know has been involved with this issue for a long, long time, and I don't feel that our citizens really want to be in a position of taking unfair advantage, but we do want to have a chance to legitimately complete the negotiations. I will be very brief because I know there are a lot of other people there who would like to speak, and if you have particular questions from our council member Tom Friesen, who is the city's representative on the project management committee, I'm sure that he could answer those there after the teleconference is concluded. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Were there questions for Ms. Stanton? If not, about Jerome Selby from Kodiak.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the opportunity this afternoon. I also will try to be very brief. I think that you can tell from the testimony you've had that this is a very complex issue, an issue that's got a lot of history to it, and I think the request from the communities is very simple. Simply to allow the entities to attempt to negotiate a deal that would come back before the legislature at the start of the next session. You folks can be the judge of whether that's a good deal or not at that point in time. In the process of doing that, I would certainly urge you to realize, in our view, and granted we have a bias in the communities, in our view there's a lot more at stake here than just maximizing the dollar return to the citizens of the state of Alaska. There's also a very keen interest for the citizens of the state of Alaska to help us communities who are buying this power be able to be viable and to be able to do it at a rate that we can have businesses. In Kodiak, we're extremely strapped because of our power costs of moving into the value-added processing of our seafood. And I thought it was very interesting that Representative Barnes conveniently omitted Kodiak and the fact that our power rate about 14 cents a kilowatt hour, while she was rattling off all those 8 and 9 cents per kilowatt hour figures, ours is 14. And we have studies, we've looked very hard at the value-added processing issue, and the one thing that keeps us from being competitive with Seattle in value-added processing of our fish products is our power cost. Plain and simple. We need to do a better deal than what we've got right now. We've been paying a lot of money. We're one of the cash cows in this four dam pool. And we really need to put this money back into the community and allow ourselves to develop some other things which will bring money to the state of Alaska. Value-added processing brings money into the state of Alaska, as well as it lets us grow our community, which means, guess what, we need to buy more power, then it becomes more profitable for the power company. So we really need some help here in straightening this thing out. It's a very complicated mess, and we don't think that adding another third-party entity, though, into the mix is going to make it any simpler. I guess I would argue that it's going to make it a lot more complicated. What's being proposed by the private entity is now you're going to sell what's currently a public entity off to a private entity who needs to make a profit, who's going to turn around and sell that power back to a public entity for us to try to work with as a community. Now, if what I just said makes it sound simpler to anybody, I'd like to know about it, because I don't think it simplifies things a bit. I think it makes it a lot more complicated to do that. So what we're simply asking is that you folks postpone this bill, keep it alive until next session in January, postpone it and give us the opportunity to have these power companies sit down and negotiate something that makes sense for all the citizens of the state, as well as makes good sense for the communities, gives us an opportunity to move forward. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Were there questions? If not, we'll go to Glenn Allen. Is Alan LeMaster online? Okay, how about Donna Tolman?
This is Alan LeMaster. I'm sorry, I had two phone calls ringing at the same time.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. It obviously is a long and difficult problem that we're dealing with, but I, like the gentleman before me, feel that with the negotiations that are going on and have been for some time, I think it only fair that we allow our representatives of our CBA here to their negotiations before we jump in this with both feet. Now, tourism is a major industry in many of the communities served by the four dam pool projects, and I'm involved in tourism. High costs for food, housing, dry goods, due to the remote locations that we live in, are passed on to the tourists. But the increased electrical costs would be passed on to the tourists also, and that just means our we become less competitive in the marketplace, and that concerns me a lot. We're already paying close to 20 cents a kilowatt hour here, and let me tell you, we're not subsidized, and I had to leave the meeting shortly, but when I got out or when I came back, I heard that there was a comment made about our CBA and others having poor management. Our board and our managers here have worked tirelessly for years trying to solve our problem. The last 4 or 5 years, the problem that we have had here, we've had solutions that we could have put in place. As you well know, you folks have gone to bat with us to get $35 million to us, and we fought and fought and fought that battle to try and win, and we got nothing but lip service from either the legislature or the governor's mansion after we were given the grant. And as a result, that project has come to a stop. The only thing we can do now is move forward, move away from that, and try and do something different. And if it turns out that our purchasing our share of the four dam pool is the way to go, then maybe we should do that. Maybe it isn't the way to go, but we should at least be given that opportunity before the state steps in with both feet and steps all over us and ruins our chance to do something good for our community. So I just beg you to take that into consideration and give us some time, put this on the back burner, let us work our plan, and if our plan doesn't work, you can always bring it forward when there are dollars to do these things with. Obviously, your problem now is budget cuts, and I don't know how you can purchase a four-dam pool when you're trying to cut the hell out of budgets all over the state of Alaska and just scrape us dry. So I'm a little emotional about this subject because of other things that are happening in the legislature. And we'd like you guys to really do the right thing here. You have an opportunity to step back from it and let us step forward and see what we can do. I appreciate the opportunity to talk. The only other person that's been able to stay here for the duration is Dan Billman, the chamber president, and he would like to speak if you have a moment.
First, I'd like to, I had indicated that I would let a spokesman from all of the communities get in today. We're not going to be able to take testimony from everybody that was signed up around the state. I'd like to go next back here to Juneau, Mr. Paul Anderson. Did you want to speak for Petersburg, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Paul Anderson, Mayor Pro Tem of Petersburg, Thomas Bay Power Commissioner, and a successful candidate for the State House in the last election. I lost.
Okay, Dan.
Really, what I'm seeing and hearing, we have fought hard and long for the long-term power sale agreement in Petersburg. We went to elections, and it was passed by the majority of the people. I would not see us in divestiture if we hadn't had to invoke self-help. But we had to invoke it to guarantee that we would have power for the consumer to turn on the switch. With the Gravel proposal, we have a problem. We worry about calling 1-800-Alexandria, Virginia, and getting a recording that says business hours are from 8 to 5, and if it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we don't know when our power is going to be restored. With the local entities involved in it, we can call our local people, and we know within an hour and a half, that our generators are going to be switched over while they're taking care of the down lines or any problems that we do have. We have that reliance on it right now. And I would encourage you to hold back on this resolution. Let us proceed with our divestitures, as we have been acting in good faith at all this time. And right now, we feel that we've been hampered by the Gravel proposal because he comes in and stops where we were going. We have had 9 months working on the Hartzik report. he includes this in the 2 years. I have attended the proposal in Kent, Washington. I've attended the proposal here in front of ADA. I attended this morning in front with the Chamber of Commerce. I have heard different proposals coming out. I haven't heard where the funding's coming. I've heard everything different every time. It just depends on the weather. If it's stormy in Washington, this is one proposal. If it's sunshiny up here, there's another proposal. So I don't know where you're going to go, but I wish you'd hold off. Thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Doug Roberts in Wrangell. Is Mr. Roberts in Wrangell?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for giving me some time to testify at the hearing. I'm going to be real brief. As I said in front of the ADA board, that to try and amend or breach the power sales agreement with the city of Wrangell at this time wouldn't be in the best interest of the state nor the city. That's not an option. In my opinion, to proceed with an RFP knowing that any proposal to divest the project would probably require changing the power sales agreement, it would seem to me that would be in the best interest for us, since we've been drugged to the table on divestiture already, to conclude the divestiture and the negotiations that we've already started, since we didn't initiate the negotiations in the first place. But for the city to make a determination whether divesting the project to the purchasing utilities of the 40-amp pool is in the best interest of the city of Wrangell, we'll have to make a conclusion on the negotiations to make that determination. If we go back to an RFP process and we'll never make that conclusion, we have to decide as a community whether it's in our best interest to proceed with those divestiture talks. And also, it's between the state and the city of Wrangell, those power sale agreements that we've entered into in good faith are between the state and the city and the Fort Am pool and the purchasing utilities. So in my opinion, to disrupt these processes right now that have been instigated by the state is going to lead nowhere. And I think that you could conclude negotiations, but you're going to have to allow the communities to make a decision whether it's in the best interest of the community to proceed ahead. And this has been, the proposals that have been offered have been disruptive towards that process that we had no desire to enter into in the first place. So let's conclude what you started before we proceed with an RFP proposal that could possibly happen maybe next year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Were there questions? Okay, if not, I'm going to close the hearing for today. We're already 40 minutes past our normal cutoff time. I am still finalizing the schedule for next week. I'm not sure when this bill might be scheduled again or the resolution, so you just need to check the schedule. And for the members that are still here next week, at least 4 days of the week, we are going to have morning meetings and afternoon meetings so that we don't get too far behind in the number of bills held by the committee. And with that, I'll close the hearing for today. Thank you.
Are these still online with testifiers?
I'm sorry, your name?
Are these still online with testifiers?
Yes, we have a number of people that we're just not going to be able to get to today. And again, if you would just check the schedule for when the bill is noticed again. Thank you.